nothing major. What I wanted to propose to there's no necessity for us to do that. Yeah, if we agree, in the meeting today, we are having to leave this bill that will take us only 3 minutes. Then there's this unfinished business that we did yesterday. We're expecting a PCR to address us again, so that will be it. But the big slot today belongs to ICT and PCR. Now, let me check. Johan, are you ready, Lapis? Yeah, let me hear you, Johan. What is it that you want to sensitize us on? Johan Lapskakhne, he knows that you can't just address a hoshi without wearing a jacket, you know. That's a sign of disrespect. That's why he do. He's a true African, you know. True African. In our culture, you can't do that, you know, or else, they won't go on my mind. Okay, as I said, John, don't disappoint me. I said you won't address us more than 3 minutes. So, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. If the members, I think two documents were distributed this morning. It's 8C and 8D. Now, 8C, the heading is Portfolio Committee Amendments to Managing Procedures of Provinces Bill. That document indicates all the amendments which the National Assembly approved. Chairperson, as you indicated, it's merely technical. There's technical changes, linguistic changes. One place we changed the sequence of clauses 5, 6, and 7. The reason being that the old clause 5 referred to negotiating mandates and negotiating mandates and final mandates. And then only after that was clause 5, then clause 6 dealt with negotiating mandates and clause 7 with final mandates. So we proposed that the sequence be changed so that you start with negotiating mandates and final mandates. So when you get to legislative mandates, then the reader will already have an idea of what those mandates mean. So that was the one change there. And then, Chairperson, we also changed the definition of legislative mandate. The reason being that is on page 3 of 8D. The reason being that the original definition, as this committee previously passed it, referred to sections of the Constitution that do not deal with bills but with other questions. So we deleted the reference to those sections and we inserted a reference to any other question. Now, on the same page, members will see that we have then also defined what the question means. It's almost in the half of the page. Question means any question affecting a province and which requires a decision by the NCOP. So that is just to make it clear that these mandates apply to bills as well as other questions where the NCOP requires a decision from the provinces. And Chairperson, that is basically, that's it. No principal changes, except that, I said, we deleted references to some sections in the Constitution and we then inserted the reference to any other question. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, with Lapska. As I said, colleagues, that's it. That's the only thing we're bringing forward. Just to remind some of us is that this we are trying to create this uniformity when provinces had to send their mandate to the NCOP. So sometimes there were some inconsistencies where some other provinces will allow the chairperson of a committee to sign a final mandate. And that was not in line with it. It was not in keeping with the constitution. So this bill will try to strengthen that. Now, can I see if there are members of the debate this amendment from our colleagues in the NA? If none, what I'm going to do is I want to table the bill with all the amendments to colleagues and check if there's any province that wants to move that we accept these amendments as proposed by the committee in the National Assembly. And I will do it.
Thank you, Chair. There was also not a move that we accept this bill with amendments.
Thank you. Honorable Antoni proposes on behalf of KwaZulu-Natal. Honorable West.
I will second that proposal, Chair. On behalf of Free State.
Thank you very much, Chair. Ask Free State. I think must also have a memorandum of understanding with the Blue Bulls that they must now because they're giving headache of late. The bill has been accepted with those amendments from the NA. The committee accepts the bill as amended. Will therefore make the initial arrangement that the provinces be informed accordingly and will be expecting them to send us their final mandate. That will be done according by my office. Thank you very much. Dear Parliament.
There's one request. With a lot of work that we have, in my province especially, they want us to go there, to go and brief them on any amendments. Now, the request is that with our busy program, if you cannot be there, that the minutes at least of these meetings be sent with. Then at least it gives the committees in the legislature to see what the amendments are. Thank you.
Take it. Last bit. We've done our part.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Please excuse us. thanks, last bit. You can go and do some other work. Thank you very much. Having dealt with this particular item, as I said, we are expecting in this meeting to have a peace era. I'll come to ICD. Peace era, are they here? I'm expecting the chairperson to be here, the CEO to be here, and the board members to be here so that they talk to us. That is the private security. I wonder who is here. I don't see the CEO, I don't see the chairperson here. Maybe that's here. Who is there?
Okay, Chief. Can I hear you?
Yes, Chair. it's only senior management that is here to present. And there are reasons why council or the board is not here. This team, the one I'm leading, took over from the CEO, Seth Mugabe, only on Monday, the 27th May, 2008. And as a result, we were not privy to some of the information. And we were only instructed to come and present here. Unfortunately, the then CEO did not inform council or most members of council about this presentation. As far as I know, it's only the chairperson who was aware. I spoke to him yesterday, but other members of council were not aware of this presentation. So I took it upon myself as an acting director to come and present here. So my prayer this morning is that maybe we can be given a chance to present even though council is not here.
Oh, maybe I made a mistake. I'm Hoshi Mukwen. I'm the president of the chair of this committee. I don't know who is addressing committee members.
Sorry, sir.
I don't know who is addressing committee members now. Who is addressing us?
Oh, sorry. It's inducing order. I'm acting as the director for CIRA in the absence of Seth Mukhabi, the CEO.
Thank you very much, Sayad. You know, I think this message will go to other entities. That as members of parliament, not that they were idling, we don't have any work to do when we invite people to come and appear before us. There is a tendency by some entities who are taking as if it's business as usual. And we're not going to accept this because we think we're being undermined by some entities. This program was long out a month ago. And for us to get this kind of treatment from PCRA is not acceptable, really. Because if board members are not here, only officials, who are we going to talk to? We've been having people here. For example, look at the ICD. The cream of ICD is here. Look at Secretariat. The cream of Secretariat is here, all of them. For the past 5 days or so, the whole week we've been having them. The whole cream is here. This is just unacceptable. So, unfortunately, maybe there are other things that we can do in Cape Town. Go back. We'll tell you when to come back. Maybe everybody will come here because when accept to be addressed by officials, one board member to be here who must be accountable and responsible for all the activities of this entity. For that reason, please, Chief, you are excused. Thank you very much. On that score, we are now, colleagues, you'll remember that yesterday with this unfinished business, where ICD was still talking to us. We unceremoniously interrupted Mr. Shabalala while he was busy addressing us. With your permission, colleagues, I will therefore request Mr. Shabalala to continue where he left off from there, and then we'll see what we can do. And thanks, Mr. Mongwe and your team for understanding, because we know that it was an inconvenience. You came ready yesterday, but we had to stop you just in the midst of your presentation. Without any much ado, Tatana Shabalala, you know where you left off, just shoot from the hip, Chief. But if you are not, I caught you or, off guard or not prepared, I can give you some time. I can go for a commercial break. Yeah, we can go for a commercial break, then you can start presenting. While they're busy preparing their gadgets, let me sensitize members of this committee that on Friday we are debating the Judicial Service Commission Amendment Bill. As rightly said by Honorable Wade at Clause 11, that took us more than the whole month, you know.
That's the
Leroux Clause, Honorable Leroux Clause. So let's be ready, colleagues, to go and participate in that debate on Friday. I learned it will come immediately after the budget vote by, we'll be just a second on the line. I think Honorable Ntuli and Honorable Leroux, they will be engaged in some bilaterals. Then Honorable Mac and Honorable Dr. Van Herden, they will engage in some bilaterals. So I think on Friday we'll be singing from the same hymn book. So, but if that fails, then I'll hear from the podium what's going to happen. But I know they're not going to disappoint me, these members. Yeah, immediately after this, I'm checking with Tatana Mongwe. Is your detachment ready?
Yes.
Or are you still trying to get organized?
Yeah, I think we can proceed, but you know there's a problem between the linkage.
Oh.
But I requested the lady to assist getting the people from the technical services to help us. But I think in the meantime we can proceed because of you have the document. Am I correct? Yeah. I'll just indicate which page we are because actually this is the second last page of my presentation.
No, I think it's fine. I think it's allowed to continue. Continue, Mr. Shabala.
Thank you, Chair. When we ended yesterday, Chairperson, I was almost at the end of my presentation. Safe to say I was in slide 42, which deals with the challenges. So don't be surprised that I'm just going to be on air just only for about, with regards to two slides.
In fact, you said in conclusion.
Chairperson, I fear to do that, rather take you through the challenges and the priorities. But Chairperson, with regards to the challenges, we as the ICD, we sat down and we said, as Mr. Mongwe indicated yesterday, that we wanted to, that this is page 42 of the document. Slide 42.
Yeah.
Are you all there?
Can we assist our members who left their documents in the office? If there's an extra. Oh, that would be cool. Oh, the extra copy is here. Thank you. No, my office is organized. Much organized. Well organized. Unlike PCRA, you know. Unlike private security. We are so organized.
As Mr. Mongwe indicated yesterday, one of the approaches that we wanted to take was to restructure program 2 and 3, and thereby trying to beef up the investigation component. And this we were going to do by getting those colleagues in program 3 who are monitors and case analysts to convert them into investigators with the little training that we were going to be offered. But unfortunately, because of some financial constraints, that the process was not finalized. And we're only going to be approaching the National Treasury come September to make a pitch with regards to the money that will assist us in terms of ensuring that we carry out this restructuring. The whole reason, really, Chairperson, is to ensure that we capacitate the investigation component so that we can then move from where we are now, where we are currently standing at 72 investigators. I think this will move us to about 110 investigators once the restructuring has been completed. But also, this Chairperson, we believe that because of investigators are on a daily basis engaged out there on the road, doing investigation, they will also be in a position to assist us in doing more station audits, which currently is a responsibility of Program 3, Chairperson. But also, we believe that the restructuring also will assist us in terms of our turnaround, improving our turnaround time in terms of finalization of investigation. The other point, Chairperson, that we still believe is a challenge is addressing the legal gap that exists currently in terms of the recommendations. Once again, Mr. Mongwe yesterday spoke about the fact that legally the police are not compelled to implement our recommendations. But of course, that becomes a problem because we invest resources in terms of conducting investigations. And at the end of the day, once we make recommendations, and if those recommendations are not accepted, that becomes a challenge because of it, it looks like you're just simply wasting, we just simply wasted resources. So we are taking an opportunity with the amendment of the SAPS Act to make an input in terms of ensuring that we're going to address that legal lacuna that currently exists. Strengthening of relationships with our stakeholders is an ongoing process, Jefferson. In March this year. In March this year, Jefferson, in KwaZulu-Natal, we hosted a workshop where we called our key stakeholders, which was attended. That particular workshop was attended by the provincial commissioner and his deputies, the DPP's office, and other stakeholders who are very key in terms of our work. And we were able to see in that workshop that we seem to be very far from each other. We couldn't understand actually our respective mandate in terms of who is supposed to do what and so forth. So as a result thereof, we've decided that in the coming financial year, which is where we are now, we are going to ensure that we convene stakeholder workshops in all the other 8 provinces that are currently remaining, because KwaZulu-Natal has been. In terms of priorities, Chairperson, I think my executive director spoke about the fact that we have already started rolling out the 4 satellite offices to which we got funding for. That is in the provinces of Limpopo, the province of Free State, Northern Cape, and the Northwest Province. The relocation of the satellite office, I think Mr. Mungo also as well spoke about it yesterday. Let me not detain you much on that. And of course, we want to ensure that the program investigations is ready, because of the Auditor General is going to be starting this year in terms of performance audit. So we want to ensure, I mean, you heard Mr. Mungo yesterday spoke about the fact that we are confident we hope we're not going to get a qualified report. And I also want to echo his words and say, when the performance audit starts in this financial year, we want to ensure that we are ready for the Auditor General, and that there will be very little hiccups, if any, when that happens. Chairperson, I thank you. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much. Who follows? Tazana Baloi or Madam Pester? Okay. I spend one.
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members. I'm going to take you through Program 1 administration, which starts on page 3 of the panel that we are having. Slide number 3. Well, it's number 4, the one that we're talking to now. It's entitled Staff Complement. Chairperson, this slide reflects the number of ICT employees as we speak now in 2008-2009 from the 1st of April. The number of employees in the ICT are 270. We have experienced an 8% growth in that we received 22 additional positions from last year, where we were standing at 248. Without actually going through each and every office, Chairperson, I may just indicate that Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal remain our biggest offices in terms of numbers, say, if you look at those 2 provinces, 23 and 25 respectively. And our smallest offices remain Northern Cape and Mpumalanga, with 14 and 15 employees in 2007-2008 and 18 and 15 in 2008-2009. The additional position, Chairperson, came as a result of the establishment of the new separate offices, as Mr. Chabalala has indicated. Members will see that in Limpopo we have 4 additional positions, and then in Northern Cape we have 4 additional positions, Northwest 4 additional positions, Free State 4 additional positions, and on top of the national office we have got 6 additional positions. So that brings us to a total of 22 additional positions. The next slide, Chairperson, is a percentage split of the cost between national office and provinces. Members will realize that in 2007-8, when we had 248 positions, 33 of those positions were obtaining in national office and 67 positions were in the provinces. And this financial year, 32% positions are in head office and 68% of the 270 positions are in the provinces. And the next slide, Chairperson, slide number 6, talks to the status of the employment equity in the ICD per office. The first column there reflects the name of the offices, and the second column, number of filled positions. And the third and fourth columns are male and female representations, respectively. Chairperson, the present situation in the ICD is that 55% of the positions, so the filled positions, are male, and 45% of the filled positions are female. And if you look into the individual provinces, Chairperson, you will realize that the best office, or the office that are doing well in terms of the 50-50 kind of a situation that is required by regulations, it's Limpopo with 56-44% there, and also KwaZulu-Natal with 48-62% there, and the state with 56-44% there. Now the West, if for lack of a better word, the West provinces, or the provinces that are not doing very well in terms of that kind of representation, mainly the gender issue, are Northern Cape and Mpumalanga. Mpumalanga with 71% being male and 29% being female. Overall, it's only national office in KZN where you have got more female employees than male employees. Obviously, Chairperson, is a challenge. It's something that we continue working on. And the next slide, Chairperson, number 7, is employment equity per race based on occupational category. The challenge that we're having, Chairperson, is at senior management level, in fact, senior and mid management level, where you have got in senior management 11 males and 5 females, and in terms of percentages, 69% males and 31% females. That also applies to the middle managers. You're talking about your assistant directors, city directors at that level. And I also just want to make a little correction, arithmetic correction, Chairperson, and I'm very sorry about that. Under the female column, the African subcolumn there, the total down there, it should be 86, not 83. I realize that I apologize for that addition mistake. Now, in terms of race, Chairperson, we realize that Africans in the ICD account for 81.2%, and the white population accounts for 7.2%, and Indians account for 3.3%, and colors account for 8.3%. The next slide, Chairperson, slide number 8, talks to the misconduct cases that we had in the department during the 2007-2008 financial year. We had 10 misconduct cases, ranging from insubordination to very serious misconduct like fraud. If I can just quickly go through them, there are not many, there are about 10 there. The first one was misrepresentation of criminal records, was in the Northern Cape Chairperson. Here is a situation where we recruited a police officer, he came to the ICB and had criminal records, but did not disclose that he had got criminal records. He had a criminal record. Strangely, he was not found guilty at the disciplinary hearing because of technicalities. We are told that the Chairperson was not convinced that the ICB did ask him during the interview that whether he had criminal records or not, those kind of technicalities. And the second one, Chairperson, we had the cases of insubordination for about five employees. And the third one is an abuse of the vehicle in the Western Cape. But the serious one, Chairperson, is the one in KZN, that one of fraud. Here is a case where one of our investigators submitted claims and then those claims were paid by the department, in which claims lied, saying that he attended cases, he had been in crime scenes, had been to court, and we discovered that that was not the case. So we caught up with him, and then as I'm speaking, the decision is in progress. And the other one is in the Free State, where we have dismissed the employee already because of dishonesty and lying to the department, because he didn't pay invoices amounting to thousands and thousands of rand, and that had a very bad effect in terms of our stakeholders and the people who are supplying services to the department. The next slide, Chairperson, talks to the vacant status. As on the 5th of May 2008, we had 28 positions that were vacant. What I can say, the Chairperson, is that 22 of those positions are those new positions that we spoke to. There are 4 additional positions in those 4 positions and 6 positions in the national office. And as I speak, these positions have been advertised with interviews. The following slide, Chairperson, slide number 10, gives the reasons why staff left the ICD in 2008. I must indicate, Chairperson, that this remains a challenge. During this financial year, we lost 50 employees. And as you can see there on the second column, the one employee passed on. That was our director of legal services. And 20 of our employees left. In fact, they resigned and they joined the private sector. And the reasons that they gave why they left the ICD is because of low salary. And 29 of our employees left to and or transferred to other public service departments. And the reason is because they got promotions. But the basic line is that we offered them low salaries. We could not retain them. The main cause here, Chairperson and honorable members, is that the ICD structure is very slow. There is no criteria progression in the ICD. You get a person at a level of level 4 or level 5, and this person gets an offer at level 7 in our department. You can't put that person. You can't counteract that offer. So it's a serious challenge. I think this issue will also appear again under our challenges as a program. We have a retention strategy, Chairperson. I think I must mention this. We have a retention strategy in place. We also have your generic systems in the department, like a customer management system. But then what we've realized is that the people that are losing are people at lower levels who actually do not have any other incentives except their salary and the performance bonuses if they perform very well. But then other than that, they're looking forward to being promoted, because there's people who have been sitting in junior positions for many, many years. Simply because they can't be promoted, then they start applying elsewhere. Chairperson, from slide number 11, I think the following 6 slides, I'm not going to be wasting your time, 6 of them, they talk to the people that have been given bursaries as part of our human resource development strategy. And this is also one of the incentives that we try to give to our people. So here, without wasting your time, I'll just indicate that we've got 47 of them. And then 28 of them registered with different institutions between 2005 and 2007, and then 19 of them have just registered this financial year. That being the case, Chairperson, if I can just move to slide number 17, which talks to the challenges of the program. The first challenge, Chairperson, that and honourable members, that we are facing with the ICD, as I briefly indicated, is the fact that when the ICD was established in 1997, a work study was conducted by GCSA, and they said that for this institution to work to operate efficiently, it needed to be funded, it needed to be given positions amounting to 535. Now, as I speak, 11 years after the establishment, we are only at 270. And as far as we're concerned, even this 535 is no more relevant, Chairperson, because the 535 was relevant then, 11 years ago. So it's a serious challenge, Chairperson. get to this 535 baseline in terms of staff complement. The second challenge is the one that I've spoken to Chairperson, staff turnover, because of lack of growth and also because of low salaries that we're offering to our people. The other big challenge, Chairperson, that complicates our budget management is the fact that the EDC posted in second for the past 4 months. We have had an acting EDC since then, and what happens is that when a person is acting, he or she is not paid the full salary of the position, they just pay one time in that position. And the financial result implication of that is that we have got money that is left unspent under personnel, money which is attached to that position. And we're coming to something like close to a million on a yearly basis, because this post is not, has not been seen for the past 3-4 years. And this is, other than the fact that we, there's no stability in the department, there's no uncertainty because an acting person comes in, he or she doesn't know how to strategize because they don't know whether he'll be here tomorrow or next week, something like that. And this thing is felt throughout the whole department, from the most senior people to the, down to the to the lower level employees. This affects us. We have conducted the job evaluation as required by the DPSA, and also based on the fact that our people are overweight. This is serious because we have got the services of ICAS. It's a private company that that is rendering wellness programs in government departments. So in the ICD, we also enroll their services. Now, the reports that we're getting on a quarterly basis are that our employees are overweight. They're stressed because of the fact that was more, but we're expected to do this much. If I can give an example, Chairperson, a plus in the ICD, let's say in HRM, it's going to be doing, it's dealing with leave, it's dealing with condition of service, your medical scheme, salaries, all those kind of things. It's like a level 5. But then in another department, the same, the person in that, not even in that, on that level, at high level, only deals with leave. That's only that the person deals with condition of service, or deals with housing subsidy, or deals with that and that and that. So that's why it's very easy for our people to be coached by other departments. But then if you evaluate their job because of the volume of the work they're doing, then it comes out that their positions should be graded at a higher level. And that is what the job evaluation is all about. Now, we have come up with both results from independent people. We have done that. But the problem is that we don't have money to implement those upgrades. So that is another challenge, Chairperson. We went to National Treasury last year. We requested for funding to implement this job evaluation. We didn't get anything. But Chairperson will continue to knock on that door for us, because it is defeating the purpose of our repeating strategy. Mr. Chawla has spoken about the structuring. I'm not going to waste your time there, that we need funding as well to deal with structuring. I have spoken to burnout and stress, labor problems due to high workload. And the most serious challenge Chairperson wish to ask is actually not good for good governance. It's the fact that in the province, we don't have education of duties in the admin company. We only have one admin clerk in some provinces. This clerk is the person who order goods and services, the person who receives the goods and services, the person who processes the invoices, the person who distributes and whatever assets that are there in all the office. And this is a very, very big chance for corruption. You can't have that situation. The person who orders equipment or orders furniture or whatever goods and services shouldn't be the same person who receives it. And that shouldn't be the same person who pays. So because of lack of human resources, we find ourselves in a situation where we use one person to order. And this is what happened, and the result of that is what we have seen in the Free State. The case has spoken to the person who did this. They couldn't pay for these invoices. They kept invoices for years and years and years, and then the service providers were on our list. On the other hand, on the internal side, you can fit this guy because you are the only one. You expect this person not to go on this, because if he goes on this, there's no one to run it that way. And it's not only doing admin, it's doing admin, finance, and business. So it's a big challenge, Chairperson, lack of segregation in certain provinces. Chairperson, the next slide talks performance. I won't be wasting time there. Maybe what I may highlight, Chairperson, is the fact that bullet number three to me is very important, that we have been able to address all the general concerns regarding leave and asset registers, which were issued in the previous financial year. The ED has spoken to the award that we received in terms of being the best department to come up with the integrated management risk strategy in the entire public service. And the last slide, Chairperson, talks to priorities for 2008 for the program, the issues that we would like to get addressed this financial year. We would want to have a fully fledged asset management unit at national office. I have indicated, Chairperson, that we had got additional positions at national office, six positions. Three of those positions have been allocated to IT, and then three have been allocated to asset management. But then, Chairperson, this is not sufficient. As I've indicated, also in the province, we need to have at least a person who is dealing with assets so that it shouldn't be an issue anymore. When the Auditor General visits those provinces. That also speaks to the second bullet, where we want to strengthen provincial offices in terms of people in admin to have more than one person in admin, so that we don't open chances for them to get involved in corrupt activities. The finalization of the second processes and the implementation of job evaluation results.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baloyi, on that sad note.
But why?
I think Honorable Ntuli, myself and me, fortunately, will be speaking on this debate tomorrow. The timing is so good because it's still fresh in our minds. We know what to say tomorrow in a Tuesday debate, and we'll expect some responses. Yeah. I wish I can say that I cheer up after this sad note. Madam Pester, can you make us smile?
Let me try, Chairperson. Thank you. Chairperson, honorable members, we page to slide 82. Chairperson, I'm going to go in detail into this slide, then it will be easier to understand the rest of my slides. In the first column, this is now expenditure for the year that has just been completed. Financial year 2007 and 2008. In the first column on the left-hand side of the table, I've broken the budget down into the three programs. The program administration, I'm also giving you there an indication of the post holders in those posts. For example, under program one, administration, you would find the ED's office with his support staff. You will find the four chief directors and their support staff, and then you'll also find the support services. I'm thinking of the components, finance, HRM, auxiliary services, as well as the staff members that are supporting the line function in the provinces. So those people are all under program one. On the far right of this table, the last column, you will see number of posts. There I give you an indication of the number of staff that is sharing in this budget. If we look at investigations or program two, you would see that the provincial heads, we've got nine provincial heads, and their deputies fall within this budget, as well as our component legal services, our deputy director investigations. We have an anti-corruption command unit in national office that runs throughout the country to do the specialized investigations of anti-corruption. And then we have the 71 investigators throughout the province. Those people, in total, there are 105. They fall within this budget for investigations then. Program 3 is complaints registry. There I've given you an indication of the components in national office as well as in the provinces. And they are a total of 73 staff members that fall in this program. Right, Chairperson, in the second column, I give you an indication of the adjustment budget as was adjusted in December. Please, Chairperson, my apology, and please also ignore that deleted information that I've given there. It was an error on my side. I've deleted it for you, so please just ignore that. In that column, I give you an indication of the budget. For example, administration had a budget of 29 million, just over 29,499,000. Investigations, or program 2, has 35 million, and program 3 has 15 million. At the bottom, you will see the total budget was 80,891,000. If we look at the next column, expenditure, that is preliminary. Now it's been finalized since we have given our documentation over to the Auditor General. That was on Friday. So I can confirm that it's now the final expenditure. You would see that Program 1 has underspent its budget. It has utilized only 27.348 million rand. Of its 29 million. And as Mr. Wallow has indicated, mostly those saving or underspending is due to the vacancies. You can see the ED's office fall in that budget, so we had that saving of his salary, as well as other vacancies that we had in the program. Then, program 2, Chairperson, you overspent its budget. They spent 37 million. Of the 35 million. So they overspent 1.7 million around, as well as complaints registry. They spent 16 million of a budget of 15 million. Chairperson, further down you will see that we had used 9,000 rand of the underspending of that savings that was developing through the vacancy to write off some debts. We had four debtors that we could not trace. And the ED then eventually gave us approval to write it off. So in total, we've spent our whole budget, Chairperson, we've passed basically 2 rand back to the National Treasury. So if that cannot cheer this committee up, Chairperson, I don't know. Right, Chairperson, at the next column, you can see the percentage of the budget utilized by investigation was 46% of the total budget was used by them, and almost 20% was used by Program 3. So it gives you an indication that, what is it, about 66% of the budget was being used by the line function, with administration using only 33%. Chairperson, the next slide on page 83, I give you a breakdown of the budget and the preliminary or now final expenditure per office or per province. And just to give you an indication which offices just overspend their budget. And in the national office, that is slide 83, you would find that the program manager 1, 2 and 3, they have exceeded their budget. You can see I've put that in bold for you, those who have exceeded their budgets. The reason being that the three program managers, not only managing their programs in the various provinces, they also have been allocated, each one of them has been allocated three provincial heads to manage and to mentor, to make sure that this provincial head not only develops in his career, but also to assist with him or her in managing his province. So this supervision, I would say, necessitated that these people had to travel more, especially also with our qualified audit report we received the previous financial year. We have put much emphasis to improve on the qualification, and it was necessary for our program managers to go down to the various provinces to make sure that we are in total compliance with the PFMA before the auditors visited the relevant provinces. So they have then expended their budget, particularly in terms of traveling and so forth. If you look further down, investigations, their chairperson, it was mainly the investigators in the provinces that have overspent a little, but more so it was the, as I've said earlier, the anti-corruption command that had to visit the various provinces they have overspent in terms of traveling. Information management service chairperson, there was the major overspending of 2 million. I will show you on further down later what eventually took place in IMS. But you would recall yesterday that Mr. Lozano has indicated to you that we have had a post office advert that was placed, as well as the newspaper adverts that were placed in 2 national newspapers. Now, that alone was more or less half a million rand was spent on that. So they have not budgeted for that. We have put that aside from the underspending in Program 1 for them then to overspend. Similarly, you will also see later on, we had to incur the license fees for the various software programs. In the past, Chairperson, software license, when you procure the computer and you procure the box of software, that program that you utilize, you once off paid for the fee for a license for that, and it was a once off payment made at procurement. Nowadays, it is not that way. You have to annually pay a license fee to upgrade that software, and that is necessary that we now pay on an annual basis. We have to pay that software license fee for all the packages that we use, and we also have to pay it for every person that used that software on his or her computer. So that was also a major expenditure. Chairperson, if you page over to slide 84, there you will see the provinces, expenditure, budget and expenditure in the provinces. You will see those that have overspent their budget in Free State.
Oh.
Oh. Got it. Here's the money to the left.
Limpopo, Mpumalanga.
Oh no.
Sorry, Chair. The Northern Cape and Northwest. But Chairperson, I must not say these overspending was also due to most of them had to relocate to other offices. Okay? So we had to pay for the relocation, the cabling of the new office. So that can attribute also to the expenditure, the overspending on their budget. Chairperson, on the next slide, slide 85. I thought to give you a comparison, an indication how our budget has grown from the previous financial year to last one, as also to give you an indication where was the high expenditure. And you would see that, okay, first of all, if we look down at the bottom, you would see the total budget grew from 65 million in the 2006-07 year to 80 million last year. So it is, you would see that compensation of employees grew from 36 million to 46 million. And in line with that growth of about 33%, you can see that our goods and services have also grown from 24% to 28%. The same for capital assets. Equipment has grown from 3.1 to 3.7. But then when looking further down software, there I'm referring to the disaster recovery solution. Now, Chairperson, that is a program or a plan that is expected in line with the PFMA, that every department should have a disaster recovery plan in place, that should a disaster fall the department, that your information is safely stored and that you will be able to get together again and have your information ready after the disaster. Now, that solution already costed us last year 250,000. And then, as I've mentioned, also the security and computer software licenses was another $1.5 million. So you can see the major expenditure was then on software or capital assets. Chairperson, on the next slide, I took the economic classification of goods and services. And I also gave you a comparison just of those major expenses. And Chairperson, I tried to highlight there on the board, you can see in red, those that I thought that was of a major increase. And looking at the very first one, advertising. There I would just refer you back to the 50 posts that we had to advertise. Now, Chairperson, I must say that we, especially in the provinces, we first advertise a vacancy in our local newspaper. And then if our provincial heads now look at the candidates that applied, and his team, the selection committee, cannot find suitable trained and experienced candidates from there, they usually come back to national office, to HRM, and ask that that post also be advertised in the national newspaper. So that sometimes increases the expenditure on advertising because such a post is then advertised twice. We have also found it very interesting, Chairperson, that let's take, for example, the ED post was advertised in the national newspaper, and that advert was the size of an A4, and it cost us more than 20, I think 23 or whatever, thousand rand for that advert. But the same newspaper we used a week or two, three later to advertise two posts of investigator, a principal investigator, and a senior investigator post. And we used the same sign, and those two adverts was placed together, and it cost us just over 10, 12, 13,000. So it seems that depending on the rank level of the post to be advertised, the advertising cost also relates to that. Chairperson, the other expenditure on advertising, you would recall the two adverts that were placed with the post office, as well as that in the national newspapers to advertise our services. That pushed advertising up. Communication, Chairperson, is the fourth one from the top. You can see I've also highlighted it in red. You can see there that there's not a big increase there. It seems that we have now got our telephone expenditure, the use of our official telephone, cell phones and landlines. We seem to have a tight grip now on that. Our people pay back all private calls that they make. They pay it back from salary deductions at the end of the next financial, next month. Entertainment, Chairperson, there was an increase. It may be big, maybe 50% or more, but I thought to just highlight that to you too, that I think the ICD is one of the departments that still do not use as much money as other departments with bigger budgets. Entertainment refers to beverages and food that is offered to our staff members during meetings that runs over a lunchtime. Now, Chairperson, we have a ruling in the ICD that if our meeting starts 9 o'clock in the morning and it will continue till way after 3 o'clock, meaning for the full day, then we allow 45 rand per person that attends that meeting to have such a meal. Now, Chairperson, I must admit, with the escalation of the food prices this year, we battled to get service providers that still give us a meal for 45 rand per person. Nowadays, you would find that our PAs, some buy bread and things, and we make sandwiches for these staff members, and we then offer them coffee and tea with the sandwiches. Equipment less than 5,000 chairs, that was a major increase. You can see about 101%. Chairperson, that increase is due to the first two satellite offices that we opened up, and we had to procure furniture for those two offices. furniture as well as equipment, fax machines, photocopiers. So that has pushed up the expenditure to that high level. The other one, Chairperson, is inventory. You can see that it has doubled. The reason for that is, Chairperson, in this specific year, we have tabled three reports to Parliament in terms of our Domestic Violence Act, and we have also tabled or incurred the expenditure of our two strategic plans that we've tabled. Last year's strategic plan was tabled in the specific year, and this year's strategic plan was also tabled and the expenditure incurred in this specific financial year. So that pushed the expenditure a little up. Resettlement expenditure, Chairperson. Last year we had a major increase in the resettlement, and I thought to this particularly one just to show to you that with our extra effort that we've put in advertising locally as well as nationally, we now seem to get more people that is located in the provinces to apply for posts, so we have less of an expenditure on resettlement. Chief, the next two slides, I give you a breakdown, slides 87 and 88. I give you a breakdown of the expenditure of travel and subsistence. Now, this is the item that is always being frowned to people for it, what kind of expenditure is this. So let me perhaps just explain. Travel refers to all the expenditure in terms of airline tickets, and then also where a private vehicle is rented. And subsistence expenditure refers to those food and beverages, as well as accommodation expenditure in terms of a hotel or a guest house. And then also toll gate fees and parking fees is included in here. And then also, Chairperson, if a person is away for more than 24 hours, then he also might claim a daily allowance, and that daily allowance is also included in here. Now, I give you here per program so that you can also see which staff members utilize it. Per program and per office, a breakdown in national office of expenditure. The ED's office had a high expenditure, Chair, but it's not only his traveling alone. It also includes he's responsible for hosting two ICD Lakotla during the year. We usually have a small mini Lakotla in December just to get together all provincial heads and component heads. We had about 32 staff members then that meet for 2 days or so just to regroup and make sure that we're still on track in terms of our objectives. And then we have a big Lakotla here in July where we need to make sure that our strategic objective is reachable for the next financial year. That has been then his office's expenditure. The other one that you can see again, investigation, that is, as I've said, the anti-corruption command. Then the next one, information management services. So that expenditure of 483,000 is mainly the staff in IT. Chairperson, for example, they are expected to, we have a centralized IT component. So it means that if we want to upgrade our computers and the software on the computers, we have to send this group of ours at least once a year around to all 9 our provinces. We basically now have 15 provinces, 15 offices in our provinces. So they have to meet these offices at least once to make sure that they upgrade the computer and et cetera. And also with relocation of our provincial offices, these people have to go down to make sure that they put the cabling into the new office, and then also when the physical moving of office happens, they also go down again to collect our IT equipment, our computers, and relocate it and plug it into the new system and make sure that everything is working well. So that has been the major expenditure in Program 3 this year. Chairperson in the provinces on slide 88. You can see the expenditure there. Of course, program 2, the investigators, are the high spenders. And then follows program 3, our monitors and our case analysts that also visit police stations and perform station orders and do monitoring, check on the monitoring of those investigations that is monitored by people like the police. Jefferson, on the next two slides, slides 89 and 90, I've given you a breakdown of the expenditure per office again, but this is only in terms of government garage cars. Now, Jefferson, you would recall that we're trying to get, as soon as the investigator qualifies for a subsidized vehicle, we try to persuade him to take on and to sign up a contract for such a vehicle because it's less expensive on the employer side then, because the employee then pays a third whilst the employer pays two-thirds. So it's a little less expensive than these GT vehicles. But still you would find that not all investigators qualify for this, especially those that have not yet serviced or serviced in the ICD of a year. So they and then a few other investigators financially feel not comfortable to sign up for a sub-vehicle. So they may then make use of the GG course. And here's a breakdown for you of that expenditure too. You can see again, Jefferson, on slide 90, in the provinces, the use of the GG vehicles. It's again the program 2, the investigators, mostly making use of these GG cars. Interestingly, Jefferson, if you look at the Western Cape, it seems that the investigators use the cars. And then program 1 will only use the car to collect mail or to take documents around to other stakeholders and so. It seems that they do not use the car much, but if they have mail like documents to be distributed and so, it seems they make use of the investigators. If he's on his way to wherever, to go to the river or wherever, they would ask, can't you just take this document with? So it also seems to happen that the program 3 staff, the case analysts and the monitors there, also jump into the car with the investigator when he goes to a crime scene or when he has to collect statements from a witness. Then whilst he is doing that, it seems they then go and visit the police station. So that is a way then to cut down on expenditure too. Chairperson, my next slide, 91. Slide 91 gives you an indication of the debtor management in the ICD. We have now for the first time, we received money in this specific financial year to appoint 3 staff members to open up a debtor section. And since then, our data management has improved. Chairperson, of the 49 debtors that we still have in the ICD, I give you a breakdown of the type of debt in the second column. Now, the all 49 debtors is currently paying back the debts. You can see the capital assets was 290,000, the third column, and they have already a balance of the debt is the last column, 253,000. So you can see that we have really progressed in getting back money due to the ICD. Chairperson, from slide 92, the next 3 slides, I thought to give you an indication of progress that we've made on our audit report. As our ED has indicated yesterday, we have received a qualified audit report in terms of assets. And we still do not, like other departments, have funding available, not even to fill, not vacancies, but to open up posts that is quite necessary. But we don't even have a small amount of $500,000 to spend on an asset management system. Other departments have such an electronic program that can assist them to manage their assets. We have to do it physically. walking around checking on the various equipment and make sure that that equipment is then put in onto an electronic logo system. So, but Chairperson, last year we've done much. We have called all our provincial staff members to the national office. We've given them a full training of a 5-day course again on asset management. Then, Chairperson, we also went down to the provinces and we trained those same people again there in the provinces on their systems, going through all the assets with them, verifying the various numbering of the system, the assets, and also help them again to process the information of those assets onto the system there. We try to make sure that they now know exactly what is expected of them. We also had a second verification process late in September last year where we went back and we basically audited the provinces just to make sure that all the assets are now registered on the system. We also went to National Treasury for funding for such an asset management unit, and Chairperson, as was indicated by Mr. Valoy, we got funding for this current year to open up such a unit. Chairperson, our internal audit component also went down very late in this year, here at the beginning of February, March, just to make sure that all the assets are now correctly registered onto the system, that it also got all the assets have the unique numbers on and everything is correct. And I must say, Chairperson, that from what we've heard from the Office of the External Auditor, the Auditor General, it seems they have found, they were quite satisfied with what they found in the during the audit in the provinces. Chairperson, on slide 93, other matters that the AG's office brought to our attention that they were not satisfied with, we have also tried to make improvements on that. Leave benefits, they were not happy with the way that leave was managed in the provinces. We, HRM has now put in a control leave register in place, Chairperson. So when a person in the province now applies for leave, he completes a leave application form, his supervisor will sign it, and then the supervisor will send it to HRM and National Office. But this control leave register is also a monthly report that the provincial head must now submit monthly to HRM, where he must indicate who were the people that took leave in his office. So it was now a cross-reference for us to make sure that we have received all the leave applications. Goods and services, Chairperson, the National Treasury condoned an irregular expenditure. It was one of our staff members have transgressed our supply chain management policy. We have developed a small procedure to reprimand officers that have transgressed these policies. We also keep a record of those transgressions. And should it the same person transgress the policy for a second time, we then implement the disciplinary process. In terms of internal audit, Chairperson, in the previous year, the external auditor or the auditor general was not quite satisfied with our progress or our reporting format of our internal audit component. And in this year, the past year, we have really improved. We have now a risk-based audit plan in place, as well as a 3-year rolling audit plan. Our auditors have done 18, basically 20 audit reports, and they have, in 2 or 3 of those audits, the external auditor were busy with them, assisting them in compiling the report. And I must say that there's now a better relationship between the two components, between the external auditors and our internal auditors. And the AG has asked our internal auditors to do the last auditing of 4 provinces, which they could not attend to. So it seems that we have also solved the reliance issue of internal audit. Then the last issue, Chairperson, is special investigation. The Office of the Minister for Safety and Security has received the findings from the Public Service Commission. It was the investigation that was done in 2004 by the Commission, but we have not heard the outcome as yet. On slide 95, Chairperson, I give you a breakdown of the four policy options that we took to the Medium-Term Expenditure Committee. The first one was for the establishment of an asset management unit to comply with the PFMA. We asked for 4 million, Chairperson. That 4 million was necessary to also appoint staff in the provinces, because that is where we have our problem of non-asset management. Unfortunately, they only gave us a 500,000. Chairperson, you can see on the far right, I've put that in brackets, what we did receive. So that 500,000 is only sufficient for us to appoint 3 people in national office. And those people will now be expected to visit the various provinces continuously to make sure that they are doing what is expected of them. The next one, the implementation of the job evaluation results. Mr. Valois has already referred to that. How we require 1.3 million rand to just pay our people what is being paid to other staff members in other departments for doing the same job. We have not received any money for that. Then expansion of our anti-corruption command. We wanted to open up another office, also for staff members in the southern side of the country, like here perhaps in Western Cape or in Eastern Cape, to cut down on traveling and expenditure. But we were not granted any money for that. Then to improve our accessibility, we want to open up a call center in the ICD. It was our policy option 4. And we asked for 2 million rand. We only received 1 million. As Ms. Lozana has indicated yesterday, that money will just allow us to open up a call center during official hours from 8 to 5 in the day. Now, Chairperson, on the next.
Can I now ask you to up the pace, please?
I'm almost finished. Thank you, Chairperson. The next two slides, you will see, Chairperson, or next three slides, I just give you a breakdown of the allocation per program. Again, you would find on slide 96, program 2 is now taking 51% of the budget, and program 3, 13%. And then, Chairperson, on the next two slides, slides 97 and 98, I give you a breakdown of the budget per province with their satellite offices. For example, I give you on slide 97, Eastern Cape's budget for the office in King Williamstown is 4.2 million that they've received. We've also given to Mtata 1.5 million, and the rest is the same for the other 5 offices that we want to, or that we have opened. Then on my last slide, 98, Chairperson, I just thought to give you a breakdown for the total for the provinces. They will be receiving 58% of our total budget, whilst national office will receive 35% of the budget. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other input? I've done. Good. Thank you very much for all the presentations that were here. After having said thank you and ask questions, we'll do just that. Before I allow members to ask questions, if I'll request of you to give us, in terms of your priority, 5 critical issues that you want us to raise with the minister tomorrow, what would that be in sequence? Can I have them in writing? If there are 5 critical issues that you think you want this committee to assist you tomorrow when you talk to the minister. If that is to the whole ICD, not to a specific unit or program. So I want that to be given to me before we were adjourned. So five critical issues. I must even raise them with the minister before the debate. Already I identified the three, but I'm not going to take it out of the bag now. Honourable West was the first to raise his hand, followed by Honourable Dooley, Honourable Zeru, Honourable Mac, Honourable Van der Merwe, in that order.
I want to thank for the very detailed report here, presentation. I just wanted to know, after this fantastic budget here, and seeing that the department has got all these funds, there's no provision for tracksuits.
That is.
In fact, I lobbied members yesterday that because ICD was so good to us, let's not ask them questions. So let me see if I'll win this battle. So let me see. Thanks. I think it's noted. In that order.
Yeah. Thanks, Chairperson. Yeah, it's this report is not good. I mean. The first question is why this entity not getting funding from the department? What will be the reason? I mean, that it will follow that the vacancies are not being filled, and you can see it, that the money will stay there. In fact, it will be used for other purposes because it's not filled. And then the question is why? Having said that, Chairperson, yesterday when they were briefing us about the death rate in the police service and their families. Don't you think it's the carrying of firearms by the police themselves is the major cause of being attacked by the skebengus? Because you know, most of the time when they start to see a policeman carrying a firearm, they'll want that firearm. In fact, they make sure that they corner that security so that they can get a firearm. Secondly, it contributes in the death rate in the families of the police because they use these firearms at home to their spouses or to their beloved ones. What is your research? Am I correct to say by these police carrying these firearms to home, they become targets? And then the other one, which follows that one, is why do we have violent crime in South Africa? Let's say if you have ever done such a research, When people are taking a cell phone, they'll shoot you, even if after they've taken that cell phone, or let's say after they've raped you, then they kill you. What is the psychological effect? What is behind this violent crime? Number three, Chair, is the relationship the ICD with the police and the community. Because maybe I have to give an advice here. As members of parliament, we do have constituency offices in our regionals, our provinces, but we don't get to the ICD trying to come to our offices so that we can be able to help them. In fact, it can be a good place where, let's say, if the SAPS is not complying, then you can come to the office of the MP and say, we are trying to get this, but they are not complying. And lastly, Chair, is this, I've seen that when these police are being charged for misconduct and all that, you find that when they are sentenced, it's just a slap on the on the wrist. You 6 months suspended. And you remember when we were there, was it Fulca, where there were some years and all suspended, and the people were back at work and were working. And now you try to find out why, when the policeman, has got is an offender, then, but when you look at the sentencing and it's light, you can see that, you know, it's a joke. That's just.
That was the Honorable Ntuli. In that order, please, Honorable.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, just on the face of it seems that we have a very important department. We have too little staff and too little money. You can comment on that. And then added to that, our ratio of people leaving is very, very high. It's like 23 or 24%, where in the private sector, once it goes over 10, then the red lights start flashing, and then there's something drastically wrong with your personnel management or whatever reason. Do you not think it is time to look in deeper into the reasons why we have such a very high amount of people leaving our force? Thank you.
That was the Honorable Leroux. Thanks very much, Police. Honorable Mac.
Thank you, Chair. I must just also say thank you for a very good presentation. And even though you are few, I think you are doing very good. I just want to add, this is not a question, a statement, and the outreach I'd like to add to what the Honorable Julie said, constituency offices, you can get the addresses in Parliament, send us the posters, the pamphlets, and the mission statements, what you are doing. So we can put it up in our offices also. People will know what to do, especially in the rural areas. Then what I would like to ask, when will there be a satellite office in the Western Cape? I am from the Western Cape, and I would like you to consider both of you. Or the Karoo, any town in the central Karoo. That's where I come from. I would like to know when there's an investigation surrounding a police official. Has there been any case where another official covers up for the one that is under investigation? Because usually what happens when a police official is under investigation, they gang together to protect this one. And how many of them are there? How many cases was there? And what is the success rate of your convictions there? Chair, that's all I have. I've also been lobbied.
Thank you very much, Chair. That was the Honorable Mac. Can I recognize the Honorable Van der Merwe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to ask a question about the bursary. I see you doing bursaries. Is there any way that you sign a contract with that person and then maybe let him come back from university and come and work for the department for a certain time?
As I said, that was the Honorable Van der Merwe. Colleagues have already touched on the understaffing that you are experiencing. I think your level of support there will make the necessary noise until someone listens. because it's high time we decided to whether we want ICD or we don't want it. Because you can't create a structure at the same time, you frustrate it not to function. Because the flag or the box of structures there in front of you to say you can't deliver. As I said, this briefing came at the right time. Unfortunately, this is the last budget hearing of this committee. From tomorrow onwards, we'll be doing our normal bills. In terms of budget hearing, this will be our last budget hearing in all the departments. We've done so well. If you can think that they were started from the 6th of May, meeting every day except Mondays until today. Yeah, I can see that these members really are. I respect your doctors and your traditional healers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are very good. Because if not, we'll be pulling the through up until now. Let me draw attention to page 7 of this document. The presentation that was done by Mr. Valori. Slide number 7, where you give the state the state of the employment equity per race. Yeah, the question will go to all the categories. I see. Let me just look at the senior management. No, middle management. On middle management, they're saying Africans are 12. No, 31 Africans and whites, 6. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
For me.
Yes. Now, the question that I want to ask, who is an African? Are those 6 whites not African? Unless if people, those were just were employed from outside this country. I want to know who is an African, because you are saying Africans is the one, then white. The question is, who is an African? You need to be commended for the wonderful job for correcting all the shortcomings that were identified by the AG. You need to be commended, really. There are departments that are failing to do that, but you managed. And it's pleasing to see that the few as you are, but you managed to win an award. I remember seeing that on the news and on the day when this was, when you were given the award. But the money for it, 20,000, and that's if you wanted to say 20 million. But if it's 20,000, no, I don't think the reading is correct here. 20,000. Now, I don't know what more can you do. I know you are having your retention strategy that is trying to keep members who are skilled in this entity. I know, obviously, you can't compete with the private sector. But in terms of people who are pushed by other departments, I don't understand why can't your positions also be be linked to that of other officials in other departments. What is the problem then? I don't see any reason why can't they stay the same. Because it beats me if someone is working for ICD around working for the department, for subs. You know, the ranking there, it's cute. It doesn't make sense to some of us.
What?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Pemba, for raising that. That's why people are at least in like clue. They don't want to be dissolved. I'm trying to get the exact reason why you have stopped or why you stopped the restructuring. Were you not ready, or is it a question of funds or what? Because if it's funds, I don't know. And the question of the other question that flows from that is the question of the vacancy in senior positions.
No.
You know, that are not being filled, and you want to fill them, but unfortunately, you are being frustrated not to fill this position. I want to get the reasons why, because it's high time when someone won't come before this committee and say, no, we don't have money. That we cannot accept, because nobody can tell us that from now on. I want to get the exact reason why they treat you like this. You know, ICD is treated like as if it's an adopted child. I don't know what's going on here. It's sickening, really. A stepchild, you know, as if this illegitimate child. Why do we have ICD if you don't want it? I think it's that time where some people come in and say to us exactly if they want this entity or not. It does make sense. It does make sense. It does make sense, really. Here you have to fill positions, you are stopped. You want to restructure, you are stopped. What is that the thing must do? Because whatever you want to do that will make life easy for you to do your work is you are being frustrated. What is it that they wanted to do? Maybe, because, I mean, now, there is a question that we asked last year, if I remember. But I'm trying to remember whether we got this answer or not, where there was a complaint by one station commissioner, who said the police were involved in some other stuff and whatever, and the ICD went and take their firearms from them. But those police officers were not suspended, they were busy working, but without their firearms in KwaZulu-Natal. Can you remember which area was it, Pemba, where I can't remember. When it's written, when we're at Wamashu police station. But I can't remember exactly which police station was it, because there were about four police stations in one meeting. So in case of, because they're saying, no, we're putting those police in danger because they're not working without their firearms. I think, colleagues, I've got other questions, but I think I want to leave them here. I think this entity needs our support. They really need our support. I think, if I had my way, I would say, no, let's stop here, you know, and adjourn now and do other things. So that we prepare for this debate tomorrow, so that I'll see if I'll get some responses before I go for this debate. Because if I don't get them, I don't think my speech won't be nice, Monica, tomorrow. You must please alert the minister that my speech won't be nice tomorrow. Unless we get some answers before that debate. About ICD in particular, specifically on ICD. Why are we treating ICD as a stepchild? It's an afterthought, you know, an afterthought You know, in Alpha Course, it's when, you know, Dallas, such a one. You know, you go for this this one, you know, that one. Yeah? You know, you try your luck, and then if everything fails, you go to Zoda, because Zoda is one of the best. You know? Dallas, such a one, that's what we're doing. You know, that's the last resort, you know. No. This is not acceptable. Doc, we ask questions after. If you want to ask questions, Doc, can give you a chance. Members have asked their questions now. You can ask questions now, Doc, before they respond, if there's any.
Are you fine?
Yes, if you can check, questions were flying from all the programs. I will allow Mr. Mongwe to unleash your unit to respond to questions. You will tell us who's going to respond on what in that order. But if, as you can see, we are so demoralized. We are so demoralized by how this entity is being treated. But we'll see how far we can go. Over to you, Mr. Mongwe.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll try to respond clear as much as possible here. What I'll do is that my colleagues will add where I might have left something which needs to be added to respond to your questions. Some of them indeed are very difficult to answer. Starting with the first one of Honorable Thuli, as to why are we not getting a funding for most of the option we are submitting. I'll say it also baffles ourselves as a department, because it's not like that we do not submit a proper business plan of what we are requesting. We do, but it's unfortunate when it comes out when they are sharing the cake from the National Treasury, we are ignored. I'll show you an example which perhaps will answer most of the questions down here. You spoke about the issue of why we can't benchmark and pay salaries with other departments. The fact is, in the previous financial year, when we approached National Treasury, we went to them having asked an option to fund our job evaluation results, which job evaluation results were going to answer on the question of staff retention. It was going to answer on the question of that the department is a flat structure. And we quantify it and show it to them why we want them to implement the results of the job evaluation. And what came out of it was zero, absolutely zero. We didn't get anything, didn't get any answer as to why we didn't get the funding. But, like I'm saying, it's difficult to go further to expand on this than that. Honorable Ntuli spoke about whether don't we think that the issue of carrying firearms also, does it not contribute on the death of police officers? Perhaps if they were not armed, it will solve this thing. Also including the issue of femicide or killing of spouses by police officers. Yes, we have done a research on this. In fact, we sensitized and submitted to the police management this opinion also, that we think that police who carry firearms, their lives are also in danger. But we also, out of our own research also, realize that it's like one coin. It's got only just, it's got different sides of it. And it's difficult to solve. Because if you disarm the police office under the circumstances which we find ourselves in as a country, the escalation of crime, you find that the police officer, then his neighbor or her neighbors, are attacked during the night. The only person they think is going to help is the neighbor who's a police officer. And when the police officer comes out if we have disarmed this police officer, he or she cannot be of any help whatsoever because criminals are armed to their teeth. So it's got the good and the bad of it. But I said further that if you look at other countries such as Britain, you will find out that not all police officers carry firearms, for example. There's a special unit which is only allowed to carry firearms, which react to certain violent offenses. But the other police officers who patrol the city do not carry firearms. But it works for them. One can ask why it works for them. One will say it's because they are not experiencing crimes as we are. We are experiencing ourselves. So it does work in other countries, but it depends on the environment and the historical background which surround the issue of crime. For us at the moment, I do not think that it's going to work for us. It's not going to work. We are under siege. The other question from Honorable Tool is why there is violent crime in South Africa accompanying even the robbing of a simple thing like a cell phone. Why you find that a person is going to be killed for a cell phone and so forth. This one, I think I will be jumping the gun if I am to respond to it. Why I'm saying so, it's I'm aware that there is a research which has been tasked by the minister, our minister, and they are waiting for that research. It's a research which is going to deep detail as far as that question is concerned. And we are also waiting for the outcome of that research, which I think the ISS is involved and some other consultants. So there will be a detailed report of that phenomenon. Now, the other question still from Mr. Ntula, I think it's also an advice to us as far as where police do not comply with our recommendation that we can approach yourself in your respective community to ask for assistance and write to you where they did not comply. I think we have taken that and we are going to also approach this situation as advice. The last one from Babantul is the issue of why police sentences are lenient in certain cases. Yes, you'll remember that, like we said yesterday, when Mr. Chabalala was presenting, he showed the inconsistency as far as the imposition of sanctions or sentences to police officers. But he was showing you in relation to disciplinary hearings, where we are of the view that as the ICD, we ought to play a very important role there. Like we're saying, if we have made recommendation, we would expect the police management to toe the line and implement the sanctions as recommended. And if they do not do so, they must report to us why they cannot do so. Because at the moment, what happened is, we might spend resources investigating disciplinary hearing, using resources that make recommendations. At the end of the day, nobody informs you about your recommendation. They just keep quiet and do what they want because they say, as far as we are concerned, we are the employer and the police officers, we are responsible for them. So as an employer, we impose sentences which we feel are appropriate for our employees. And there is no legislation which compels them to make us involved there. So we remain toothless as far as that is concerned. But to answer it to the criminal section, that one I think we'll all agree that as far as the criminal sentences are concerned, we do not have much jurisdiction whatsoever to get involved where sentences are imposed by judges or magistrates. We only accept what they have done. To respond to Honorable Lerone, whether is it not a time that we look deep into the reasons as to why our employees are leaving us in jobs to join other departments. Yes, that is true, but that starts from what we call staff retention, the strategies which we are employing ourselves in order to retain our employees. Do we have have such or not. As Mr. Valoi, my colleague, has elaborated, we do have those strategies. We have got also exit interviews, because you do not just simply let a person leave your department. You must satisfy yourself as to why this person is leaving us. We interview them. Hence, you will realize when Baloi was presenting, he shows that 20 of them left our department solely because of low salary. That is the reason. The other 28 left us simply because of promotion and low salary. Promotion in the sense that from a level 5 from ICD, he or she gets a position of level 7 in the next department. Now the question is, why is ICD who cannot retain these people like the other people? But I've said initially that we approach National Treasury with a request to fund the implementation of the job evaluation, which was going to answer that these level 5 people who jump to other departments of level 7 must be taken to level 7. Unfortunately, we don't get funding for that. And what are you remaining with? There's nothing you can do with it. You have to live with it. We try in other circumstances, but you cannot try continuously because it also will cause a revolt within the department. What do we call counter-offering? A person gets a post, say, from 100,000, he or she is offered a post of 130. We do what we call a counter-offer. We say, we are going to give you the 130 which they want to give you there. Please do not leave. And the person say, I'm happy, fine. Immediately when that person is signed, the following week, the same person come back to you and say, HR manager, these people have said, instead of the 130, they are giving me 140. What do you do? You are back to square one, because from your coffers as a department, you do not even have resources to implement this counter offering. You end up saying, thank you very much, we have tried our best, goodbye. And the person leaves you. That's what we find ourselves, unfortunately. Honorable Mark spoke about when are we going to open satellite in this area, Western Cape. Are we not operating it in Uppington? Not next year. Yeah, it's next year. It's in. We're sure going to do that. It's within our program. Yes. And the other one from Honorable Mark is there cases where the police cover each other? Yes, we do. We've got also one of the high-profile case which happened. It's only that we do not operate in kind of Hollywood style. We'll have perhaps caused so much commotion about it. But we've got an example of a case whereby a police officer shot a person, and the police tried their best to swap the cartridges which were collected from the scene and put some other cartridges there, so that when this thing go to ballistic, it comes out, must contradict with the firearm which has been used. We had such cases, and we managed to bring those cases and throw the perpetrators to book. It's only that we did not make much noise about it, but we do have such cases. Honorable van der Merwe, you spoke about the people who will give bursary, as to whether do we make them sign contracts or how do we do with that. Yes, we've got a bursary policy. When we give you a bursary, what you to an employee, you must sign a contract. The contract stipulates that for you to repay us, you repay us this in the following manner. If we gave you a bursary for 3 years, you're obliged to work for us for 3 years. In the event that you leave the department, we create a debt, like the debtors which she spoke about, the CFO. Those are some of the debtors. We create a debt for you, whereby we go to your, before we give you a pension, we must withdraw from your pension. But unfortunately, you find that people were with us because we were training people. That's what we are. We're a training department. Before the end of the year, the person has got an offer somewhere. And you find that the debt is much more higher than the patient which you have. So what we do in those instances, when you go to the next department, we ask the department to carry over, to take over the bazaar which has been offered to us. If the department refuses, then we apply for a garnishing so that we garnish you to pay back the puzzle. So at all given time, we do not lose this. We try by all means that people must pay back. But our main important thing is that we must pay back the government by waiting for the government for the term of the puzzle. The Honorable Chair spoke about the definition of African employment equity. Who is African and who is not an African? This is it's a very thorny debate. We all know about that. It's something which people ask to debate in radios and media. Why you don't call me an African when I'm an African? My ancestry is African. But we know for sure that we are faced with the so-called affirmative action policies, whereby the government is trying to balance the imbalances of the past. So from there, from those definitions of those policies and the BEE, the government has made sure that you must, in no uncertain terms, define if they came out with definition of what an African and so forth. Not solely to create division, but to try to answer and rectify and correct the past. We are all African, we know, but we try to break this down in order to correct the past.
So that those who are more African than others.
Unfortunately. Well, the second one of the Honorable Chair was why our position can't be linked to other departments. I think I've tried to answer this one. As far as the job evaluation is concerned, that is an unfortunate situation which we find ourselves. Now, the other one was the question of why do we stop restructuring? Restructuring has been stopped for various reasons. The most important one, the crucial one, was that when we took restructuring, we were trying to answer the question of beefing up investigation, because we are trying to knock at the doors where people have got pets to help us to employ more investigators, and nobody ever opened the door for us. So we said as a department, let's be innovative. Let's come with a strategy whereby we are going to try to beef up investigation. And we looked at ourselves, and we said, look, we have got a person called monitors and case analysts. Some of them have employed for those posts, are employed in those posts, but they are legally qualified, some of them, unfortunately. And some of them have got the experience of investigating from different kind of spheres. Why don't we recruit the same people within ourselves and say, guys, come to investigation, you are going to get benefits such as standby allowance, after a year you'll get car allowance, and cell phone allowance because you're an investigator and so forth and so forth. So we want you to become a first level investigator. That was our approach, based on the fact that we did not have money to hike them to the level of where investigators stand. But unfortunately, that was not well received by some of our people, and some of them were complaining about that it will amount to them being abused if we do that, because they will take themselves as investigators. So, hence we said, it has to stop. The only way for us to go forward, therefore, will be for us to approach National Treasury with this in our mind, that we want to achieve this goal. Can't you be of assistance to us? Hence we stopped it and said, let's stop this. We'll engage National Treasury, will engage Parliament in order for them to add their voice and their weight when we approach National Treasury in order to get funding once and for all for the restructuring in order to beef up our investigating office. Because currently we've got 71, but with this internal restructuring which we wanted to do, we would have managed to push our investigators to about 110 investigators, having shifted people from within. And it's not completely stopped. We're busy with it. We've come with three options. We're still going forward with it, and we'll come out with the best solution in order to implement it once and for all. The last one from the Honorable Chair was why can't we fill post in a senior position and so forth. Yes, Honorable Chair, it's that we are not experiencing people leaving our department from the senior post. It's the lower one. The middle management, the top management there, I'm sure some of us, including Wagaba Loi, have been with the department since inception. They haven't moved because at least his salary compared to the lower ones can make him survive a little bit. They can't jump ship now unless if they are going to be DGs and PTGs somewhere. So we are experiencing people who are jumping ship from the middle, from the lower ones, the level five, somewhere there. Because what do you do? Because when you look at your structure, as an admin officer, it's only level five. There's no admin officer level seven, level five. So that person gets a post in the other department, and you can't do anything. The person leaves. It's a cycle like that, unfortunately. And we are saying we can solve this by implementing job evaluation, because job evaluation has shown us that this level must go to level 7 from level 5. And this one of the firearm which were taken away, I'm not sure of this. I asked Chavalala to respond as an investigator, head of investigation as far as are concerned. And lastly, I know that the Honorable Chair said we must come with three important points which we want five years you want to take for us. We have drafted them here, yeah, and we'll forward them to you. Thank you. And I'll ask my colleagues to add on what I've said. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to add my voice on two issues that the EDS has addressed. The one is about the Chairperson, the African story. Yeah, Chairperson, I think maybe the problem is that we're using this is a template that has been that we're using in the annual report. It comes from National Treasury. I think the right word there, this border should be black. Yeah, not African, because it's not, definitely. But then I think for the purpose of this presentation, we'll change it to black, although there's stencil there. If you look in the annual report, National Treasury gives these stencils as they are, but I really appreciate that. Now, the other issue that I just want to talk to Chairperson is the issue of the... Just to add my voice on the issue of the senior positions that are not being filled, I think the senior position that is too worrying, Chairperson, is the position of the ED, and then it is the minister that deals with that. Otherwise, the other positions, if they become vacant, then the ED is able to fill them. As I indicated, we don't have any vacant positions there. For instance, I think last year we had two vacant positions of provincial heads at level of directors in Gauteng and KZN. Those were filled immediately because it is our competence as top management to fill those positions. But for the head of the department, it is the minister that handles that. The other issue that I want to talk to Chairperson is the issue of the people leaving the ICD. And then the things that we're getting from the exit interviews, Chairperson, I think that people don't want to talk about. And we've been talking about these things as senior management, but then there's nothing we can do about the senior management. The ICD structure is very flat, and this is an issue that should be dealt with at a very, very high level, from yourselves and, you know, because ICD is the only government department, as I speak, whose head is at the level of DDG. That alone tells a lot of stories, because if your head is at the level of DDG, it suppresses all other positions downwards. It is very flat, because I don't know why the reason why it can't be elevated to the same level as other government departments, even smaller departments that are headed by. You look at other small departments like your and this will help me, which are small departments like Luxa, for instance, or Samsi, for instance. They've got DGs and those other things. And immediately you have a structure that is open, it's open up there. Then it allows the other position to go up as well.
we had a very, very strange situation in SEM. The head of supply chain management is the old word, is the new word for procurement services in the ICT. That person is a DD director level. Now, her subordinate was offered a position in another department, and then she was given a level that is higher than a CD. Now, what do you do in that position? You can't keep that person. Even if you were to offer that person the level, the third level of the DD position, you're actually saying that they're going to be able to do this on the same level. I mean, it doesn't work like that. But then if the 585 structure that we're talking about had been implemented, now we're talking about 265 positions which have been approved by DPSA, but they're not funded. Those are the positions that will give us a briefing, because we'll be able to have positions into which people can be promoted. We'll be having positions which would see the ICD expanding. We'll be having situations like we're having now in provincial offices, where you don't have people in support, where we're struggling to open certain offices. I think the ICD should be functional. I think the main thing is the level of the department as a whole, as well, that contributes to this problem. Because if I get a position, I'm a chief director. If I get a position, I can get an offer of a chief director, Mr. Mungo cannot stop me, because they can't give me the position of DDG, because that is his level. You see, such kind of things. And if my director HRM gets a position elsewhere of chief director, I can't stop him, because chief director is my level. Then there's going to be two chiefs. It doesn't work like that. There's no promotional prospect, not at all. And then only like I'm not chairperson, I'm not coping with the salary that they're saying I'm coping.
Thank just a quick comment with regard to the question that you asked pertaining to the policeman. I mean, I don't know the specific incident, but just to sketch the scenario. If members are involved in a shooting, for instance, which would have to investigate the circumstances surrounding the shooting, unfortunately, regardless of the number of police members that were involved, we will be forced to take firearms and send them to for ballistic testing. And during that time, it means, therefore, that those policemen will be without firearms. But that is if they are not suspended. I mean, if they, and that is not a decision that the ICD can take. It is a decision that can only be taken by a provincial commissioner, whether to suspend or not to suspend those police persons. Now, if the department, the police, decide not to suspend, then they still keep these people. Surely they can give them alternative firearms. There will be firearms at police stations, so they can address that particular situation. However, it may be that the kind of, obviously, the circumstances under which the kind of incident that they were involved in would not justify giving them firearms until such time that the case has been finalized. Then in that situation, I think the best thing would be that those policemen would be deployed in, for instance, in administration, because then they will not be exposed to danger, where they will be sent out to do patrols, in which case then they will be exposed to danger. I think that it is something that that police management should be in a position to address themselves. It's certainly something that is out of our hands. But certainly we cannot abdicate our responsibility in failing to take those firearms and send them for ballistic testing. It's part and parcel of the chain evidence that has to be done. So yeah, I mean we do find ourselves in those situations, and we do confiscate firearms.
Yeah, I think this is no time, Dona, she must say something about it. Because I want to know, what miracle did you do, madam, that you are now giving feedback to clients? Rather than 30 days, you are now giving feedback within 7 days. What miracle did you use to get to that point?
Thanks, Chair. I think what we did during 2006, we decided to look at our business mapping process. So we sort of did an audit in terms of looking how long does it take for us to complete the case. Then we find that 30 days was too much. hence we shortened to 7 days. And then I think, Honorable Member Senduli, you also wanted to find out whether the access to firearms was also the cause of a femicide. I think, yes, the possess of and access to a gun was one of the explanations for the highest incidence of firearms. The study that we conducted that I shared with you yesterday, we find that out of 30 cases that we researched in all the provinces, 80% of cases committed were committed by members using the service arm. Thanks.
There was no question directed to Madam Fester, but I need to check if our monies are safe in your hands.
No, she hasn't got money.
You can't complain about that. She has got no money.
Another response to questions? I think they have exhausted a lot of questions. Colleagues, as agreed when I lobbied you, I think this will be the last round of questions. After having lobbied you and you promised, unless it's the Mongo in your team, you want us to ask more questions, we can do that.
No, we're right.
Yeah, on that note, let me take this opportunity to thank the Mongo and your team. Under these trying times, under these different circumstances, but they're able to pull through. And we're aware that there is a shortage of staff in all provinces. It shows that with the kind of push that they were seeing here, if you were well staffed, you do better than what we're seeing here. We hope the politicians here, regardless of their political affiliations, will very try to come to our rescue. But thank you very much for everything. We hope when we meet next time, we'll even get some a juicier report than this that will even indicate that there are some improvement as far as the funding is concerned and as far as the staffing is concerned. And it's sad to know that sometimes you don't get cooperation from police when doing your job, because it's not on for someone to go into being arrested, being healthy and strong, the next thing after some few hours that person is no more. And what they would do, they would always say, no, he was assaulted by other inmates, hiding behind it. And when you investigate it, you are such a bad group. The experience that we had at Forecast in Mpumalanga, of that woman was arrested, who was locked in with a male inmate. That's a case in point, because a guy who is there, he didn't get any joy when he was investigating that case. Until we came in there as a committee and expelled those people who were involved and removed them from that station. And your guy really was struggling to get a go, because they were just blocking it unnecessarily. As we said, they were aware that really the situation is not on. And even the kind of treatment you're getting from us as this government. But anyway, that was it. That was it. We'll see what we can do. Yeah, having said that, on behalf of the committee, maybe let me give you about 60 seconds, Dr. Mongwe, to say a parting shot on behalf of the team.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for indeed having given us this opportunity to present to you, and you having listened to us and contributed in the different manner in which you have done, which give us encouragement. And I hope that you will take forward, do your part, and assist us in order for us to be capacitated so that we will discharge our functions to the best interest of our democratic country, and I hope that you see the importance and the relevance of the existence of an institution of this nature. I do not think that we have moved so far away that we have forgotten the past, and the past in relation to a police state, and I do not think that it's what you would like us to slip back to a police state. This institution of the ICD is the same as a human rights organization, and we are doing nothing more than being just a human rights watchdog over the police. We are neither counter-revolutionary, we are patriotic, and all we are doing is to make sure that our democracy is in safe hands. And with you, you can help us to continue to exist and carry our function. I thank you.
On that wonderful note, I think it will only be fair for us to wish you well, and very good. Thank you very much. Good. Honourable members, the last item that we're supposed to do, I think we can defer it for later. We're supposed to deal with the complaints that were sent to us by PopCo. I don't think it's that urgent. We can also slot it in sometimes next week. So I know members are going to prepare their speeches for this afternoon. And Monica, can you lead them to enjoy our lunch? Where are we eating our lunch, Lobby? Where?
Here.
Oh, yes. Let them enjoy our finger lunch here. So, with your 15 minutes, is there anything that you want to raise before we adjourn this meeting? 3, 2, 1. Thanks. Everything's adjourned.
I'm not speaking. Bueno, que le. Yeah, Marcel, if I can have them before 11 tomorrow, I'll be happy. Really? Moi. Moi. Fire Moi. Cool. Love it.
Cool.
Gracias.
I'm told that they're calling you somewhere, yeah. They're going to call you. What time was it? Now that's what I'm telling you. It's just going to call you. And it's still here, but there. No, I'm not. It's still good. Because the team is must we remove him from the list also. I said, I don't know where he is. I'll remove him and let him come and put something there. Why do you remove him? It's something else. What I'm thinking, tell you already, you knew your experience. In case I'm speaking, I'll simply say, I'll inform you, you tell him what you have to say, no, no. Instead of the money, you could make that. Yeah. Then just be a comrade there, you know, and just be an activist. But in case, yeah. When?
Well.